Committee on State Government Innovation and Veterans will be in order. Today is Wednesday, March 9th, 2011. We're going to get started here with our first item on the agenda is Senate File 81. Senator Daley, I understand that you have an author's amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
Senator Daley offers the A1 amendment, and we can discuss that, Senator Daley, but we will wait for a quorum before we do any voting on that. So please proceed.
Members, if I could draw your attention to the slide here, first slide. The subject here is reducing the state workforce by 15% by the year 2015, by the end of that fiscal year, June 30th. This is about a vision for transforming our workforce to help Minnesota achieve redesign and reform. It's about helping Minnesota reinvent government employment for the 21st century. As we transform, we must ensure that our workforce retires with dignity. Let me stress the importance of great 21st century training and 21st century technology for our workforce. There is sufficient savings in this bill to address both of these pieces and to prepare our new workforce for the next generation. We are in this together, the legislature, the governor's office, the state workforce, and all of our taxpayers. We can do this. This slide simply shows us the past 20-plus years, the general fund spending has consistently outpaced inflation plus population growth. Here, members, you see the Minnesota employment by sector. Since 2006, every industry has lost jobs except for the public sector. Minnesota's workforce is aging. The median age in 1984 of state employees was 38 years old. By 2015, that average age of state employees will be 60 and older. 50% will be 60 and older. The focus of this measure is the executive branch, exclusively the executive branch, as 89% of all state workforce is in the executive branch. And I'd like to mention at this time, this does not include MNSCU.
Senator Daley, if we could back up to that slide, just for those that might be tuning in here today. When you talk about employees in the executive branch, can you define that a little further for those who would they be? Who are they?
Those would be folks that were. If you think of all the different agencies, if you think of management and budget, if you think of DNR and you think of veterans, state patrol, correction officers, anyone who works for the state.
Okay, thank you.
While other states have taken certain measures, including layoffs, furloughs, and salary reductions to achieve certain state employee right-sizing or transformation, Minnesota to date has not utilized any of these measures. All right, members, now I want to draw your attention to the bill itself. I'll walk through the bill and then take any questions that you may have. Actually,
Senator Daley,
I need to wait. Do we have a quorum, Mr.
Yes,
Chair?
Yes, Senator Daley, we do have a quorum. Again, repeating, Senator Daley moved the A1 amendment.
Members, this is to get the bill in the shape and form that I'd like it to be in to start a discussion.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say nay. Motion prevails.
Thank
Senator
you, Mr.
Daley.
Chair. Members, I'll walk through the bill now and take any questions you have. Subdivision 1 requires a 15% reduction in the executive branch workforce by June 30th, 2015, and lists the tools we authorize the governor to utilize in reaching that level, including attrition and early retirement incentives. You'll note that paragraph C excludes Minnesota State colleges and universities from these requirements. Subdivision 2 requires the commissioner to perform an actuarial analysis to estimate the number of employees to whom these incentives will be offered. estimated payments required to cover the associated costs, and last but not least, the best way to implement these reductions. Subdivision 3 is one of the early retirement incentives we would authorize the governor to utilize. This pension-based incentive would grant employees one additional month of service credit, of pension service credit, for each full year of service. This is, of course, designed to provide incentive for the most senior state employees to take early retirement. A quick example is you get 24 months of credit for 24 years, so you'd get two additional years of credit. Subdivision 4 is another early retirement incentive. This, members, is the same incentive that was offered last year that many state employees accepted. That incentive is the payment into the employee's health care savings plan equal to up to 2 years of the employer health insurance contribution. Subdivision 5, we're about halfway there. This requires agencies to use best practices identified by other states in implementing the reduction. Subdivision 6 prohibits positions vacated from being filled by outside hire. Subdivision 7 prohibits anyone who receives an early retirement incentive from being employed by the state or being a consultant for the state in the next 5 years. Subdivision 8 directs that the savings be canceled back to the funds that the money came from originally. Subdivision 9 directs that a state elected official can't be offered early retirement incentives. Senator Wieger. Not picking on anybody. I say that because he's my good friend, my next-door mate there. Finally, Subdivision 10 is standard language that makes clear that this legislation is not an unfair labor practice. Okay, so members, you may have questions. How does this change from the original draft? The original draft had the rule of 70. It was a very expensive approach, and the workforce report exposed the possibility to revise this approach. So after consultation with many, many different folks, we decided to take this, make this change. And a month of pension service credit for every year of service, as I mentioned before, is now in this new draft. This saves money and still provides incentives for senior staff. Members, I await your questions.
Are there any questions at this time before we ask for any testifiers that might be? Are there any testifiers to the affirmative that would like to speak? Are there any testifiers? Oh, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Daley, does that 15% reduction also apply to public safety employees like state troopers?
Senator Daley?
Yes, it does, Senator Carlson.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any testifiers to the negative that would like to come forward and speak? If so, please do. Please sign your name either before or after you testify. I think there's we need a pen up there. Please state your name.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Mortrude, and I'm a registered nurse and a lobbyist for the Minnesota Nurses Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. The Minnesota Nurses Association represents over 700 nurses working throughout state government, including registered nurses working in the Minnesota Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, Veterans Affairs, and the Department of Corrections. Our nurses provide care to veterans, the elderly, those suffering from mental illness and disabilities, and the incarcerated, in addition to inspecting hospitals, nursing homes, and other health care facilities. While our association understands the enormous difficulty, the current budget crisis, we oppose Senator Daley's bill, Senate File 81, to reduce the state workforce by 15%. A measure of this nature would not only put our patients in jeopardy, but the health and well-being of nurses. Many of our nurses are already working in dangerous situations. You may have seen a recent article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune that exposed the unsafe working conditions for nurses working in the 16-bed community behavioral health hospitals and the security hospital in St. Peter. RNs have been subject to a number of injuries and instances of workplace violence. Staff was cut in recent years so that nurses working in these facilities no longer have immediate security on site and must rely on local police to provide adequate protection. Consider the situation at our state veterans home. Staffing levels were so low that the Department of Health cited the Minneapolis Veterans Home with numerous health violations. Circumstances put vulnerable patients at risk and cause undue grief to their families. The ability of the state nurses to carry out their work effectively is at a crossroads. How the state addresses this crisis will determine to a large degree how services will be provided to the vulnerable populations for whom we have a moral obligation. Until the 1990s, the state registered nurses received pay and benefits that were roughly comparable to those nurses working in the private market. Since that time, wage and benefit levels have fallen dramatically behind so that a nurse working in state service receives on average $13 less per hour than a nurse working in a typical acute care hospital. An arbitrary cut to the state workforce in isolation from other budget cutting fails to recognize the vital work state nurses do in meeting the needs of its citizens and the individuals under the state's charge. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. George. Senator Daley, One moment. Senator Daley, just for clarification here on my part, does your bill specifically require each agency to reduce their workforce by 15%, or is this, because I'm just thinking if some might only have one or two people within, how does that work?
Mr. Chair, members, it's a great question. This does not prescribe specific cuts to specific areas. I want to allow the governor the flexibility to make thoughtful choices as he and his team think is appropriate to make the right size, right measures in the right areas for all the right reasons. I have every bit of confidence that he will make the right decisions for both the employees, for the state agencies, and for all of our taxpayers to come up with the right answers.
All right, thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Daley, for that response, because listening to the Nurses Association, it would seem to me that the executive branch would want to take into consideration and may want to have less of an impact on those who are providing direct services or direct care than to other kinds of entities or operations within a bureaucracy, if you will, or an agency. There's room for discretion here in perhaps reducing at the management level rather than at the service level.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Olson, absolutely. You know, maybe when we're looking at public safety and we're looking at the state patrol officers, maybe they're at the right number right now. Maybe they only need to cut two or three people, and they're at the right number. Maybe this gives them the opportunity to consider shared services with other entities. The possibilities are there for them to go about their right-sizing and getting the right measures in place without this bill prescribing and dictating exactly how they'll do that.
Thank you.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Daley. It's along those same lines, my question. The prior testifier talked about not wanting less nurses available so they could do other things, whether it was less benefits or lower salaries or whatever, kind of like the education freeze we proposed to save the workers. That makes sense?
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair. Senator Gazelka, is there a question there? Can you?
Senator Gazelka.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Affirm that that's one of the options that they could do. So it's not just about cutting people. It's just making sure we have the right program. But sometimes it could mean less benefits as a way to keep more people on the job.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, yes. If we just look at the language in the bill in Subdivision 1, Paragraph B, the appointing authority, which is MMB and the governor, may use any or all of the following to achieve this requirement. Attrition, and that's listed first because that is my primary focus, to allow these hardworking folks to retire with dignity. Also, though, in his toolkit, he can use a hard hiring freeze, early retirement incentives authorized in this section, restructuring of benefit or pension programs as authorized by other law, furloughs, and layoffs. The early retirement program in this section is enacted as a tool to assist in complying with the required 15% reduction. So it's not just attrition. It's not just early retirement incentives. It's a bunch of different measures that could be taken to achieve this.
Senator Carlson? You got your answer. Other testifiers, please state your name.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Richard Kajewski, the MAPE Legislative Affairs Director. I represent 13,000 state professional employees in my capacity. MAPE is opposed to Senate File 81. A couple of reasons. State agencies and unions just went through a process that offered 900 employees who accepted early retirements in the state agencies and will be leaving those positions in the next 6 months or less than that. Each division in the legislature, as we all know, with maybe a couple of exceptions, is likely to get a target that's going to include cuts. And when those cuts are passed on to state agencies, likely and very often that results in job loss, vacancies not being filled, positions not being filled behind retirements, and the things that we're discussing here today. But I propose to you one thing here today. This bill will result in massive layoffs. You need to look at the actual numbers. 13% of state employees today are paid in part or in full through federal funds. So over 4,550 jobs are federally funded based on that. This bill alone by 2015 cuts 5,250 jobs, members, of the remaining 30,000 state jobs. That's over one in six positions in state government being cut by this bill. So although, and I appreciate the author's comment, we'll let the governor make thoughtful decisions, I think I resent the fact, and I speak probably on behalf of other people who are going to come up here to the table at when I'm done, on the fact that people who do these jobs for the citizens, people who do these jobs for the constituents in your district, and people who are affected by these jobs are not getting an opportunity to be heard by these budget divisions. So, Mr. Chair, that's our biggest complaint with the bill before you. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kajewski. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record and a reminder to fill out the testifying sheet.
Will do, Mr. Chairman. My name's Elliot Side. I'm the Executive Director of AFSCME Council 5. We represent 43,000 state, local, and nonprofit employees and approximately 18,000, actually it's about 17,800 in state service. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this legislation. We testified on its companion in the House as well. Mr. Chairman and members, the state service of Minnesota is one of the leanest state services in the nation. If you look at the U.S. Census Bureau, and again, this bill cuts out MNSCU, and that's actually perfect for the Census Bureau statistics. And in the Census Bureau statistics, we are the 10th leanest workforce in the nation. We have 71 state employees per 10,000 citizens, which makes us equivalent with that incredibly radical state, Florida. And so Florida and Minnesota have the same amount of state employees per 10,000. That's 71 per 10,000. So we're one of the leanest state workforce in the nation. In 2003, when Governor Pawlenty first came into office, we were 13th leanest in the nation. We went down to 10th in the nation. And over the last 8 years, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, AFSCME has lost 1,590 members in state service. That number, by the way, comes from former Governor Pawlenty's own bonding numbers. When he would apply for bonds, he had to have the census of every bargaining unit in there. And in our bargaining units, we are down 1,590 folks. Those are snowplow drivers, direct care workers in health and human services, correctional officers, people who stock walleyes and lakes, people who take care of the parks. That's a whole variety of different folks, but that includes all those people.
Mr. Say.
Yes.
Can you tell us why we're down? Retirement?
Yes. They were down because of layoffs. of not filling positions of and most recently was the early retirement incentive that Mr. Kajewski pointed out. But the reasons were over that 8 years, there was a lot of budget cutting going on in state service. The governor and the legislature cut the state budget on a number of occasions, and the state executive branch in our unit, sir, were cut by 1,590 people. Combination of layoffs, attrition, and then in the very last piece of Governor Plenty's term, the early retirement incentive that was negotiated with the Department of Management and Budget.
Was there ever a printout of how many you're mentioning layoffs and attrition and that? Is there an equal amount in each category, or
I don't know the answer to that question.
And I only bring that up is because I don't want the people those listening or watching to believe that it was all layoffs due to budget cuts, and because I know there were, you know, it wasn't just all budget cut layoffs. There was some attrition, people retiring, and that. That's my concern,
Mr. Chairman. For the people listening, budget cuts mean if jobs don't get filled when people leave, when they retire, that's the loss of that job. So there's that many people less 1,500 real number, right, out of the Governor Plenty's document, 1,590 less people. AFSCME members, not all of state service,
correct,
are members who are, basically blue collar, pink collar, as I indicated, plow the roads, do the other jobs in the state, stock walleye, a whole bunch of things that I mentioned, that they were cut due to budget cuts done by Governor Plenty and the Minnesota legislature over the last 8 years. When attrition, sir, when people left, the job wasn't filled. And so some were attrition. Some were direct layoff, and like I said, in the very end, and I, by the way, that the early retirement number is not included in the 1,590 because that was done through the end of the Plenty administration. That's just happening now. So that's additional folks who've been laid off. That was another number that Mr. Kajewski gave, 900, right? Another 900 or so.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. So we've got 10th leanest in the nation. So since 2002. The governor and the legislature has cut the state workforce by 11%. There's a myth that government is growing in Minnesota. In fact, it's been shrinking as a share of GDP and personal income. And the reason for that is that government's been shrinking. Again, we think that this gets us away from the real issue. We don't have an expenditure problem. We have a revenue problem. And in fact, in the last 8 years, the wealth of Minnesota's millionaires has doubled as their state and local tax rates have decreased by 4%. So we're asking the state workforce, we're treating the state workforce as if they were the cause of the problem in this bill, when in fact they were never the cause of the problem, they're not the cause of the problem. And in fact, Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, you could close state government, including this legislature, the governor's office, and shut all the lights around here, and you would solve exactly 21% of the state budget's problem. That's when it was $6.2 billion, maybe a little bit more than that or less than that now, depending on what happened. I wanted to point that out. Also, I wanted to point out that in four of the last years, state employees, and I've been the chief negotiator for three of the four contracts under Governor Plenty, and in our last contract, we took two zeros. In the first biennium of Governor Plenty's term in office, we took two zeros. So we've had four zeros in the last 8 years. And I mention that, sir, and members of the committee, because there's a myth going around, and it's passing through this building, that state employees haven't sacrificed, that state employees haven't contributed to trying to solve the problem, when, in fact, state employees, through layoffs and attrition and freezes in their wages, have tried to contribute to solving the state's crisis. So I wanted to point that out as well. So we've got a number of facts, I think, that are critical to the argument here. Now, as to the bill itself, the bill and the author in the House, at least, I didn't get to hear, I apologize, Senator Daley's introduction, but the author in the House purports this bill to be a government reform bill. We see it as a pure budget cut. We don't see any reform in this bill. We would suggest, instead of taking an arbitrary number, why don't we try to solve actual problems? Let's take what we've just done recently, permitting. We want to shrink the time that permitting takes place. The way to do that is frankly, very unsexy, very boring. You know, you take the Toyota system, the Lean system, the Kaizen system, you break down the permitting process in the systems, look at each system, make sure that there's a rational approach going on in that system, and then look at the transitions between the systems so that you can see how to get this process from 6 months to 3 months. Our people would want to participate in processes like that. We did so under Governor Perpich when we transformed the whole DD delivery system from a big factory system where, frankly, there was warehousing of patients into state-operated group homes and other types of local group homes that have a maximum of 16 people in it. We did it under Governor Ventura when we broadbanded in the State Department of Transportation and created the Transportation Specialist Series. We've done it under his Governor Perpich, Governors Carlson, Governor Ventura. Unfortunately, we didn't get to do it very much under Governor Pawlenty. It wasn't, frankly, something the governor was terribly interested in doing with us. Governor Dayton has indicated that he wants to sit down and work with the employees, which leads to my next point. If one really wants to reform government, I would suggest certain principles, sir. And those principles include, first, driving fear from the workplace. If the workplace is full of fear, workers are not going to offer up the best suggestions to put themselves out of work in the economic environment that we have here. They need to know that when they make a suggestion, that they may not have the job that they have now, but they'll have a different job that they can be trained for and that they have an opportunity to succeed in. So first, you drive fear from the workplace. Secondly, if we're going to do early retirements, we would suggest that we do it through the actual systems. In other words, that you do when you, if in permitting, for instance, as my example, there needs to be five less people in the permitting process. And either we can't find other jobs for them of equal value that they can be trained for, or they just choose to get out. Then it's time to look at early retirements or enhanced severance. And in fact, that's how we modified the incomplete DD system. But you do it as part of an actual transformation process, not as an abstract, arbitrary, and capricious number picked out to cut state government. Thirdly, one flattens the organizational hierarchy. Over the last 8 years, we've seen a proliferation of management in this state, the likes of which, you know, you just can hardly believe. The ratio ought to be, by most private nonprofit standards and other standards, 1 to 13. The ratio in state government is 1.675. There's managers upon managers, you know, managing managers, but there's not that many frontline workers. In terms of frontline workers, the next principle we would suggest, again, these all come from the economist, post-war economist Demings, is to flatten the organizational hierarchy. So in other words, put less into upper management and drive resources to the point of service where they reach with the client. And that is a reorganization that one does through the executive branch. Frankly, I don't think, and if it was Democrats run the legislature or Republicans run the legislature, I don't really see the legislature being able to provide much to that. It's really an executive branch piece to do. And I've always thought that, and we've always said that. So, and finally, we need to understand if we're really talking about reform, and we're not talking about budget cutting, that it may require upfront investments. What do I mean by that? We have some systems in the state where we have computers that don't talk to each other. But let me go back to healthcare. One of the things in healthcare that I think everyone, Democrats and Republicans, agreed on was that in order to reform healthcare, we needed to have electronic medical records. Electronic medical records require great investment. Same thing to take five systems that aren't talking to each other and create a single system that talks to each other. It may take upfront investments. So, in fact, reform is not necessarily a budget cut. It may require an upfront investment in order to get long-term efficiencies. So we throw those principles out because those are the ways we judge if we're talking really about reform or are we talking about budget cutting. This bill, in our opinion, is talking about budget cutting. It's taken an a priori, just capricious number, 15% off the top, when we're already 10th leanest in the nation. It applies to all state agencies, unless I misunderstand it, many of which don't operate in the general fund. General fund is about 14,000 positions in state government, which, not the entirety of the 35,000, I think, that we think is being referenced in here. This bill will cause the reduction, as Mr. Kajewski pointed out, we believe, of over 5,000, I believe I agree with Mr. Kajewski's number, 5,250 state employees. I also would like to add to that that in the midst of trying to pull out of a recession and create some demand, how laying off 5,250 people or having them eliminate their payroll and not be out there to purchase goods in the community, how that's going to help the economy grow and help the state budget is beyond me. The state's economist, Mr. Stinson, at the recent budget forecast was asked directly, should we tax the very wealthiest in the state or should we lay off lots of public workers? He said both were bad for recovery, but laying off the workers was even worse for the recovery. Why? Our members make on average, sir, and members of the committee, $38,000 a year. Economics 101 says that lower paid workers have a higher propensity to consume and a greater multiplier effect throughout the economy. You take away their wages, you take away that, they're not buying food, they're not buying clothing, they're not buying refrigerators, they're not buying anything to keep the economy going. Whereas the wealthiest Minnesotans can take that probably out of their savings. And it's not going to affect the economy in that way, which is why Dr. Stinson made that comment. Finally, I would suggest to you that if we look at government reform as a way to save money, and we look at the last group of finance commissioners going back to Governor Cui, I believe they all testified to the fact that certainly I heard Kiedrowski, Gugno, Wheelock, and I'm trying to remember, I missed some names here, say that they didn't think there was more than 2% savings out of reforming government. Having said that, I want, on behalf of the AFSCME, to say that our members want to engage in reform and change. We've been doing it ever since we've been around. We want to continue to do it. We are the 10th leanest in the nation. We are one of the most efficient and proud state workforce in the nation. One only has to look around the state at the magnificence of the public services that are provided by Minnesota state employees to see the kind of work that our members do. And so if this is going to be an arbitrary cut of $15,000, are we going to make our prisons less safe? Are we going to take snowplow drivers out? Are we going to not fill lakes with walleye? Are we not going to have clean and parks for people to take modest vacations on? Are we not going to take direct care of the developmentally disabled, the mentally ill, the chemically dependent? What services precisely do the authors in the House and Senate want to cut? I would suggest to you this bill is unnecessary, it's not reform, and it is a mean-spirited budget cut to the state of Minnesota. We very intensely oppose this, and we don't think it's a good idea. I say again, oh, and by the way, I would also add, this is not a 15% cut, it's greater. If one looks at the bill and sees what it does, it creates an early retirement incentives. It then charges the pension funds for that. It then indicates that the state agencies, based on the salary savings, will pay back the pension fund. So you got the 15% cut plus the appropriations that then have to be paid out of the state agencies back to the pension fund. So not only does it do damage to the pension fund, but it does more than 15% damage to state agency. And I'm going to say again, 15% is a very antiseptic number. We're talking about the lives and livelihoods of 5,250 people, real human beings. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. We appreciate it. And I'll answer any questions.
Thanks, Chairman. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Seid. I appreciate that. Senator Thompson.
Yeah, I got a comment and a question. I got to tell you that as someone who supports this bill, I take offense at being called mean-spirited. This is about economics. It's about getting our budget under control. We can have legitimate policy disagreements. I don't question your motives, sir. I assume you're trying to do the best you can for your constituents, the folks you represent. I'd appreciate that same courtesy. Would you concede that while the layoffs will affect, obviously, public sector employment, that it's not necessarily a loss of all those jobs because they can go out in the private sector and find work?
Mr. Tsai.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, no, I would not concede that. There is a close to 7% unemployment in the state. Through the 1990s, Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, this state produced 37,000 jobs a year, and a small percentage of them were below living wage. In the last decade, this state has produced 4,000 jobs a year, and over 40% of those, I believe, and I'll check that and get back to the chair about, but I believe it's 40% are below the living wage. So I don't think there's lots of jobs out there. There are three metrodomes of unemployed. I think that when you look at the economies, particularly in greater Minnesota, and the role of the public sector in those economies, as a share of those economies, that it will even have a greater disparate income effect, pardon me, on greater Minnesota in terms of the effect on local economies, because public sector employees, state employees, make up a larger percentage of the economics of that of those specific areas. So that's the case. And Mr. Chairman, as far as Senator Thompson, we don't know each other. I don't assume you're mean-spirited. Mr. Chairman, I'm speaking through you. I don't assume that Senator Thompson is mean-spirited. I do think the effect of the bill, let me put it this way, and is resulting in the loss of 5,250 jobs in this state is not good for the economy, and I think it's very bad for the economy. I would say again on that point, I took some courses in college. I think we all took, who went to college, took Economics 101. And, mine was by a book by a guy named Don Samuelson, because I'm 60, I'm old. And it was an old book by a guy named Samuelson. And it talked about lower paid workers having a higher propensity to consume and therefore having a greater multiplier effect in the economy. So I think it's bad for the state, but I think it's terrible for the economy of the state and will, in fact, cause a tremendous impact because that multiplier effect's lost, and I think it would be much fairer. You know, our folks have been making sacrifices, and I think we'd feel better about bills like this and other some of the suggestions being made if we were going to ask the people who can afford it most to sacrifice a little bit, too, so that everybody contributes to solving this problem. Because right now, it's kind of like Animal Farm. All people are equal, I'll paraphrase, all people are equal, but apparently some people are more equal than others. And in this case, the rich seem to be more equal than the rest of us. So I don't agree that, sir, that, Mr. Chairman, sir, that it's good for the economy. I think it's very bad for the economy.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Side, I just, not that I want to speak for Senator Daley, but I know he doesn't believe that this is a silver bullet fix-all bill. So, Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and a question with apologies for getting here late, but first of all, I have to correct Mr. Side. I'm going to guess that the econ text was by Paul Samuelson.
Thank you.
Don Samuelson is a former state senator. Correct. I don't think he wrote an econ text, as best I know.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, you are absolutely correct. It was Paul Samuelson. I've been around this Capitol too long. That's probably the problem.
And you know that Don Samuelson did not write
I
an econ
do.
Text.
I certainly Olson do. Unless it was a human DHS.
So, Mr. Chairman, having
Senator
put that
Cohen
correction on the record, and with apologies for getting here late, Mr. Chairman, if I can just inquire of Senator Daley. There's an exclusion for the for Minsky. Can I just have an explanation for that exclusion?
Senator Daley.
Maybe you already did that. I apologize. But
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, in discussing the overall achievements that many organizations have made, Minsky has already gone down this path, and they have already made the cuts. They have already made corrections along these lines, and I don't think it's appropriate at this time to include them in this for those reasons.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Daley, I appreciate that. That then begs the question. I think during the course of these previous 8 years that there have been significant other cuts in, the state agencies, the non-Minsky agencies, and it could well be a good idea that there ought to be more cuts or there need to be more cuts, but it strikes me that if we're singling out Minsky for that reason, there would need to be a quantification of the other agencies as well. And I assume we don't have that. Mr. Chairman, the other question I had, and then a comment, if I might, is Mr. Side made a reference that this covers only general fund, not the non-general fund budget, or is that an assumption? Is that in the bill? I'm sorry.
Senator Daley or Mr. Side, whoever.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, it does cover general fund and only general fund. The savings to the general fund is about 32% because there are so many other activities.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, that would allay one fear. I mean, for instance, you're not going to lay off highway patrol officers who are covered by the highway trunk fund. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I take that back. It is all funds, so it does cover all those employees.
Okay.
The savings only goes to the general fund, though. We're looking at the amount of savings. If we're looking at it from a budget point of view.
Mr.
Kevin,
Chair,
excuse me, Senator. Mr. Lundin, could you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I can clarify it. The savings go back to the fund from which they were appropriated from. So general fund dollars will go back to general fund. Trunk highway would go back to the trunk highway fund.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. That's what I assumed.
But for
as
purposes
well.
Of the budget conversation, it's the general fund dollars that we're really focused on right now.
Okay, but Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Lundin's comments suggest that this is an all funds bill. And as a consequence, in my particular hypothetical example of state patrol officers, is something that would be covered in this bill and raises our concern. Mr. Chairman, let me make my comment. I know we'll have some further discussion. I might have a couple of amendments. But here's a concern I have with where we're going generally. This may or may not be a great idea, but we had a bill in this committee authored by Senator Magnus that added 13 positions to state employment. We had a bill from Senator Peterson that added 4 positions to state employment. That's just in the last couple of days. I haven't made an attempt to track the number of bills going through the process that are adding state employees, but it seems to be a contradiction where we're trying to make an effort relative to the deficit to reduce state employees, but we're passing legislation out of the Senate that adds state employees. Now, I don't know if anybody is keeping track of how many employees we're adding, but it doesn't become a wash. And then that begs the question of what's the point? I don't know how many other bills we're going to have in this committee that add state employees. And I'm not talking about the governor's budget, which I think adds very little by way of state employees. Although I think, as was pointed out, I think the governor in his budget did make the correction to Veterans Affairs that Senator Magnus carried. So I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, does the left hand know what the right hand's doing? And Senator Daley, I don't know if you've had a chance to track other bills going through the process here. That gets a little bit complicated. But I'm curious as to if anybody can answer my question in some fashion. I don't think Mr. Side probably can't. But
no, Senator, excuse me, Senator Olson wanted to respond.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And since Senator Cohen is bringing up making corrections to statements that have been made, can I just interject that I think on the floor earlier you referred to me as going crazy. And I may already be crazy, but I'm not going crazy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I do
Cohen.
Have to defend myself. That was meant as a compliment.
Oh,
to
really?
To the extent.
I guess I missed that part.
Yeah, you should have heard the full. To the extent that you're having hours and hours of hearings in your committee working on the budget. And it's in the reference to that in a complimentary sense that you're working extremely hard. And I assume, like we all do, we work very hard around this place.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, I'm enjoying that immensely. I'm not going crazy doing that.
Okay.
I said I may already be crazy, but
Mr.
I'm not
Chairman, let me make it clear. It was meant to be a very, okay. very flattering comment.
Thank
you very
Senator
much.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Tsai.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. And thank you, sir, for your cordialness. I appreciate it. To answer Senator Cohen's question, I think he was not in the room before when I indicated that when Governor Plenty or now Governor Dayton puts out for bonds, they have to submit a document to the bonding companies. And out of that document, we learn that AFSCME members in state service have been reduced in our bargaining units by 1,590 people, to answer your question, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, from 2003 through the end of the Plenty administration. So in terms of the AFSCME component of state service, we're down 1,590 folks, approximately 11%.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd just like to throw out a couple of comments based on some of the initial questions and answers and discussion, and that is that this is, like Mr. Chair said, this is not a silver bullet. This really is kicking off a really important conversation that we need to have. And believe it or not, many of the comments that Mr. Side made, I agree with. I very much look forward to working with those groups to come up with the right size as we reinvent government, as we transform. Looking forward to working with those folks, the hardworking folks. And it's just really important to me that all of our state workers know that the spirit of this is not a mean-spirited, going after people kind of thing. I very much respect and appreciate the hard work that folks do throughout the state of Minnesota. As a military service member, I joined the military not to get rich, but to serve my country, to make a difference. And these state workers aren't working for the state of Minnesota to get rich for all kinds of stock options that they can cash out and retire when they're 35. They're there slogging it out day in and day out, making a difference, working hard. They're not getting rich quick. They are doing the job. They're working. They're working for us. And we really appreciate that. And I just need everyone to know that we appreciate, truly appreciate the efforts that they make. This is about having the conversation when we've got a $14 trillion federal deficit. We've got $17-plus billion that we get from that federal government that has that $14 trillion deficit to support our state funding, with a $12 to $15 billion unfunded pension liability. And, oh, just to top it off, we're trying to balance this $5 or $6.2 billion deficit we have. I don't know about you, but that's like a holy cow moment. That's a lot of debt. Those are big numbers. And like I said, this is just one small measure to kick off the conversation to figure out what is the right size. What are essential services that we must provide for the state of Minnesota? Because our wants are unlimited. We could say $40 billion, and that wouldn't be enough for some. $50 billion, and it wouldn't be enough. What is the right amount? As I was knocking on doors, I was trying to figure out what's the vision for the state of Minnesota. What is our mission? What's the purpose? What are our goals and objectives? Where are we headed as a state? What are our core competencies? Again, what are our goals and objectives? And to answer that is the answer that we're looking for, to be able to set the priorities. Where is that line? Where do we draw the line? Is it $30.5 million as we spent in 2010 and 11? Is it $32 billion that was in the November forecast? Is it $33.2 billion? What's the right number? We need to answer what are our essential services, what are our priorities first, and then I think we can have that budget conversation. But the way the state is run, that's not how it works. Governor Dayton was in for how many weeks, and he was forced to do a budget without having that important conversation. So I don't know where that fits into the big scheme of things. I'm really looking forward to that conversation myself personally. The MNCPA, the Minnesota Society of CPAs, did a case for a strategic plan. I think it's a great case to have that conversation. What are our long-term goals? If we don't know where we're going, we don't have that roadmap, well, any road's going to get us there. So I just wanted to throw up my appreciation for the hard work of the work that state workers do. I very much appreciate that. And this bill is not the silver bullet to answer all things, but to push us in that direction.
Are there any more questions for Mr. Side? Otherwise, I would like to get some more testimony, if it's for me. Right.
I promise.
I know, and then I'll come over here. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Side, you talked about being the 10th leanest state for government employees, and I was just curious if you have any idea where we are as far as average salary plus benefits to the other states around us.
Mr. Side.
Mr. Chairman, I can find that out and get that back to the committee. I don't have that with me today, and I wouldn't want to give you a bad piece of information. I can, Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, could tell you this, that study after study that has no funding from this union or any union I'm aware of shows that, on general, public sector workers in Minnesota are making at least 4% less than their counterparts in the private sector. And that a recent study by the Economic Policy Institute, full disclosure, my national union contributes to that national group, but this study was not funded by us in any way. It's a professor from Rutgers from the School of Management, and he said in his study that when you compare total compensation, now including pension and health benefits and wages, to the private sector, we're 7.9% less on average than the private sector. But in terms of the surrounding states, I'd be happy, Mr. Chairman and members, to do my best to get that back to the chairman and he could distribute it any way he Thank likes. You. If that's okay with Senator Gazelka, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, that would be you. Fine. I want, Mr. Chair, one follow-up to I absolutely agree with you. I met with the AFSCME group in Brainerd right after I got elected. They talked a lot about we ought to do with something with the overabundance of managers and flattening the structure. And if you guys have ideas, we're listening.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gazelka.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had a question for Mr. Seid and maybe Mr. Kolodziejski as well on a couple of specific items in the bill. Just how would you respond to two things? One is the provision that prohibits the reemployment of any individual as a consultant for 5 years after termination. And the reason I ask that question is because often we find that, you know, once someone has been separated from employment, they take with them, of course, a lot of knowledge and expertise, and sometimes the state agency finds it the most cost-effective solution to bring that person back on a temporary basis, part-time basis, you know, a very inexpensive, in a very expensive way, just to help kind of manage through that particular service, provide that service, and it actually turns out to be, you know, cost effective. So I'm wondering about that, and I'll ask my second one too. There's the
Senator Dibble, could you, on your first one, what line are you referring?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've seen some people looking.
This is on the delete all. 2.32, subdivision 7 through 2.34. Okay. And then I'll just ask the second one. The bill provides for the application of Public Employment Labor Relations Act, stating that, you know, unilateral implementation of this section is not a violation of PELRA, or it is not deemed an unfair labor practice. And I'm just wondering, just by saying that, does that make it so?
Mr. Tsai.
Mr. Chairman, in terms of Senator Dibble's first question, I think that's one of the problems in this bill. We lose permanent institutional memory capacity depending on what's cutting, what's being cut. And that's lost forever. Once it's lost, it's lost. It's a loss of what's often called institutional memory and also skills, knowledge, and ability to deal with problems. And that capacity is lost forever. We think a far better way of doing that, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, a number of years ago, the legislature on a bipartisan basis, signed by Governor Plenty, passed a bill called the Transportation Accountability Act. That act compares apples and apples between what vendors produce for the state and what state employees do. And it does it in the Department of Transportation. It's focused on the Department of Transportation. We think it should be extended to all of government. It would be a wonderful reform. And what it does, it basically allows you to make an apples-to-apples comparison to what you do in-house versus what you would do outsourcing. And the and so, for instance, and we have learned through that effort that if one wants to do striping on the roads in the state of Minnesota, and let's say we let those folks go, that it would cost the state of Minnesota 32 cents a stripe. Actually, I think it's 31.9 cents, but I don't know what to do with a tenth of a cent.
How many stripes?
How many, yeah. How many stripes can you put on the head of a pin? But 31.9 cents to stripe on outsourcing, when if you do it with state employees, it's 8 cents a stripe. And so now the people would be let go. You'd have to, you know, if you're going to continue to stripe, you'd have to privatize that. It would actually cost four times as much in that particular instance. And then, and again, the idea is to do apples and apples comparisons. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, we're concerned about not filling back. We just make the state leaner. We don't necessarily make it more efficient or more effective. Depends on what gets cut. To your second question about
Mr.
the public.
Seid, yes. Before you go to the second, okay. I'm going to ask Mr. Bodern to explain subdivision 10 for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman and members, if you actually, I can. Subdivision 10 is a provision that was previously included in legislation that has been passed and enacted as it related to the early retirement incentive. If you look back at subdivision 4 on page 2, you'll see a reference to laws 2010, chapter 337, and that's really the source for this language. That was an early retirement incentive that was provided for a limited period of time, and it's just to make clear that the employer has the sole discretion to provide that incentive.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Syed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Dibble. I understand this language completely. It's saying we're going to legislate this. We're not going to bargain it. I do want to say, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, that the right to bargain early retirement incentives is one of the is part of the scope of bargaining included in the Public Employee Labor Relations Act. In other words, we don't need to legislate this. We can bargain it. And, in fact, the last bill that was referenced by, I don't want to mispronounce.
Mr. Bodern's
name. Mr. Bodern's point, which he's, I agree with him completely where it's a reference to. We had offered the state that we would bargain that with the state over the bargaining table. The state chose not to do it in that way. You have to ask Governor Plenty's administration, Commissioner Hansen, as to why. And instead, we negotiated, Commissioner Hansen and myself negotiated this and moved it through the legislature. But, in fact, early retirement incentives can be negotiated. In the example I gave, Mr. Chairman, Senator Daley, of when we transformed the developmental disability services from big warehouses to state-operated group homes, we, in fact, negotiated something that we referred to and is referred to, I believe, in law as the Memorandum of Understanding, an MOU, which was a negotiated early retirement incentive to get people who did not want to go through the change and weren't going to go through the change an opportunity to leave early. And we negotiated that. So we would prefer to negotiate these things rather than legislate them. And the Public Employee Labor Relations Act, it says that's a mandatory subject to bargaining. So what this language does is it says that despite that, the legislature is going to override that and pass it.
Mr. Chair.
We have Senator Torres Ray.
I've had my hand up for.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Beginning.
Do you mind?
Okay.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Syed, could you tell us some of the places in greater Minnesota where there are a high number of state jobs that would possibly be affected by this bill?
Sure.
Mr. Syed.
We've got, and again, I'll be happy to share that. We've actually, I'm going to look to see if I have it with me today. We actually have developed some GIS maps to see where, in fact, workers are so people can understand the impact of their budget cuts. I'm going to just check to see if I have that with me today. I don't, but I'll just anecdotally say St. Louis County, we've got, there are 3,900 public employees and about 1,000 state employees. Thief River Falls, Bemidji, Brainerd area, a large number of state employees, Mankato and Blue Earth County and Nicollet County. There's over 1,000 state employees in those two counties. The Winona County area. And then if you look at Marshall, and I'm missing areas. But all throughout greater Minnesota, that's anecdotal. But again, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to get our GIS map, share that with you, Mr. Chairman, and for distribution and get it out to committee members. But we've actually mapped out where state employees are and so that we can see what the effects of cuts might be in particular regions of the state, and I'd be happy to share that. I just don't have it with me today. I apologize.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Syed. And also the other thing I was going to ask you is on this contracting piece that that Senator Dibble mentioned, I'm sure you're probably aware that the state of Minnesota does about $1 billion of contracting. And what I'm wondering is what you think the fairness of this is of saying Minnesota workers can't apply for these jobs, but the contracts can be applied for by companies from out of state and even out of the country, but Minnesotans who lose their jobs under this bill will be unable to apply for any of these contracts or bid on them, just like anybody else would be able to bid on them. They'll be forbidden from doing that. So our tax dollars will be going to other states and perhaps overseas for some of these contracts rather than hire the people that are trained to do these jobs.
Mr. Syed.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, and by the way, I left out Ramsey County as another place with a large number of state employees. But to Senator Goodwin's point, Mr. Chairman, this is a major concern of ours. This bill seems to suggest it's not what we're paying, but who we're paying.
Mm-hmm.
If state employees aren't going to do this, but the work has to be done, then it's clearly going to be privatized. And in most cases, as I've indicated, we think those will be done by private sector groups, how good they'll be doing, what the accountability is. And I would suggest to you what the cost of accountability is. You need oversight in order to do that. That's why we passed the Transportation Accountability Act of the Department of Transportation, so that we could have some accountability on what we're getting from vendors. This bill doesn't have anything like that in it. But most importantly, it would take state employees out of the job, and if the services still had to be done, they would have to be privatized, outsourced to either private organizations or outsourced to out-of-state organizations or out-of-nation organizations. We think, Minnesota state workers and Minnesota public workers, and I think this is another point I probably should have mentioned, when they retire, they stay in the state. 90% of the workers stay in the state and spend their money here. We don't know what happens with other folks who do the job. So it's a concern for us, and it's about where the money goes. I mean, if the idea is to get workers who don't have benefits, who get minimum wage, who don't have any benefits, yeah, that part will be cheaper. But just like on the striping issue, someone's going to make a profit on that, and that's going to increase the cost. So we don't even know what the effect is going to be in that regard, except that state employees won't be doing the work. Somebody else probably will.
One final question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Seid, I'm wondering now, you said that about 15% of state employees are not federally paid but just state paid. I mean, about 15,000, you're saying, are just paid by state funds and not federal funds, and that's mostly who this bill would affect. Is that what I heard? Or
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, I think I thought this bill included the entire executive branch, all in this case, minus Minsky, so that would be about 35,000, 36,000 state employees in the agencies that Senator Cohen's questions brought out. That would include people in dedicated funds. What I was suggesting, Mr. Chairman and Senator Goodwin, based on the governor's budget that he just put out and the 6% cut that he made to the state sector, which I don't support either, just so you know. I really, it's not about party, it's about policy. That was based on a general fund base, Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, of approximately, round number, around 14,000. That 6% cut would result in of general fund positions, that was specifically a general fund cut, of about 772 positions. Senator Daley's bill, Mr. Chairman, as he explained it, applies to all 35,000, 36,000 people in the executive branch, and so some of that would be savings to the general fund. Others would be money that would go back to the Trunk Highway Fund, DNR funds, all the various dedicated funds of the state, as opposed to the general fund. So what the general fund saving piece of this is unclear to us based on what we've seen and heard. We don't know what the general fund, and after all, the deficit, Mr. Chairman and Senator Goodwin, is driven by the general fund, not by the dedicated funds.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Daley, I guess I've said this in the past. I've worked with the state of Minnesota for 16 years prior to coming to the state, and I have a couple of questions related to I hear your message constantly about the intention that you have to really resolve a major problem, and I so appreciate that. It is a very difficult problem that we all have to just figure out how to bring our best ideas. But there are two issues that are concerning to me here. One is who takes advantage of the early retirement incentive. And lowering the age and providing the incentive, if I think about myself in the state, I would be able to do it in 3 years if I had stayed. And with my skill, this would be the perfect age for me to jump into a foundation position or into a private sector position and leaving a position in the state. But I can think of a lot of my peers that will not leave because of age, because of circumstances with their families, but mostly because of health. Healthcare is a very big piece that keeps a lot of people employed. Mm-hmm. And these people that are not able to take care of these incentives are actually pretty expensive to the state. We have to pay for that. So I'm curious about whether or not you've talked to the commissioners about the people who will not be able to take advantage of these early incentives because of age, and because of healthcare costs, and how much would it cost to actually stay with a pool of employees that cost a lot? And if it in essence you are not doing exactly the opposite. So you are, when you say you're cutting 15% of people, you're not necessarily cutting money, because the people who stay are not necessarily the employees that cost less to the state of Minnesota. I don't know if I'm making that clear. So that's a question I have, and I don't know if you've talked to the commissioners about how that works, because we have an aging population in the state of Minnesota. I work with the Department of Human Services, and I can tell you that the people who are going to stay, who cannot take advantage of early retirement, are people who cost money. They're not going to leave. So they're going to cost you more. And the second piece that is concerning to me is that a lot of the state employees that we have now were hired to do some work that we do with counties and federal funding. So that funding comes from the county agencies and the federal government, and as the state employees, we serve the counties and help pass that money. We actually don't receive a lot of money from the state to do services. Child welfare is a good example. We receive almost 15%, I think, right now, that is the state money. So our job, my job in the state, was paid with federal dollars, county dollars, a little bit of state, and the work that I did was mainly to serve the counties with the state for the federal dollars. If we lose that, you're not going to be able to help the counties and really help the state and the county and hospitals do the work that they need to do. And I'm wondering if you've talked to the commissioners about the impact of reducing the labor force that is already very. I remember when I was there, I had to do a lot of work, and as we lost employees, I had to do more. And now you're saying 15% less, and I think a lot of people are just going to leave because this is an impossible proposition. And these are federal state dollars, and I wonder if you could respond to those two issues about, you know, really working with federal dollars, serving the counties, how states can do this, and whether or not we're actually going to save money by reducing the labor force.
One moment. Are there any more questions for Mr. Side? He's a busy man as well, and I don't want him, unless he wants to sit and listen to this, if there's no questions for him, I would like to be able to excuse him. So if he does have to go someplace, he can. Does anybody have any?
Mr. Chairman, just before I go, the head of the state pension fund, Mr. Bergstrom's here, to Representative Torres's point. We have very low utilization of the rule of 90 because people can't retire because they can't afford the health insurance, and they can't go without it. The cost of health is too much. So he can give you the exact number on that, but it's a very low percentage, sir.
You bet.
So if there are no other questions, thank you for your cordialness. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Syed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Daley, would you like to answer the questions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, I have not specifically talked to those commissioners about it. You do bring up some very good points. I will follow up with them to find out more of the specific details. I think that's the least that I can do to make sure that I absolutely understand the entire impact.
Thank you.
Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Yes. First, Senator Daley.
If I could go back, there was some discussion about 5 years and a limitation that a person couldn't come back until they had left for 5 years. I think that it's just right that I say something in response to that. The intent was not to lose intellectual capital. That's really important, to keep that institutional knowledge. The intent was, if someone were to take this benefit, let's say on July 1st, 2011, and allowed to come back right away, defeats the purpose of the intent of the bill, and that is to right-size, to transform, to redesign. That's the intent. So 5 years is beyond the four-year scope, starting the 1st of July, 2011, going until June 30th, 2015. So it's got to be four-plus years. And so we thought 5 years was the right amount.
Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick comment. I note the the legislative branch is exempted from this bill.
Thank you. Senator Goodwin?
Mr. Chair and Senator Daley, I'm wondering if you recognize that, you know, if 5,000 jobs get cut, that'll mean another 1,000, 1,500 in private sector jobs as well. And if your fiscal note contains not only if your fiscal note contains both the tax loss, because state employees do pay taxes, and plenty of them, and also the unemployment costs that will be involved with these layoffs, does your fiscal note take those things into consideration, and the private sector unemployment rate and tax loss?
Senator Daley, I need to apologize. I didn't give you a chance to respond if you were going to Senator Cohen, and that's my fault that I jumped so quick. So if you would like to, feel free, but
I'll pass at this time, Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin, then. Did you want Senator Goodwin to restate, or
could you say the question again?
Right, kind of a two-part question. I wonder if
actually I recall if we could, Mr. Chair, could Mr. Lundeen comment on that?
Sure, Mr. Lundeen.
Sure. I think everybody should have a copy of the fiscal note in front of you. And what the fiscal note is taking a look at is just the cost to the state of Minnesota, to the agencies, and to the pension funds. It does not address any of the local impacts or any of the tax revenue impacts. If you wanted to address, you know, the local impacts and that would be another process and require requesting a local impact note to be completed.
Well, Mr. Chair, to Senator that Goodwin. Point, the loss of unemployment compensation is lost to the state when they have to pay unemployment comp, as well as the taxes that won't be paid as a result of the job losses is a cost to the general fund as well. So normally, in the past, we have considered those costs as well in a fiscal note because they do impact the general fund. So my question was, and obviously it's true that this doesn't include those additional, those costs to the general fund that would be offset. The other question was, Senator Daley, is if you had considered the private sector job loss as well in connection with this bill.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin. If I could just answer the question as best I can, keeping in mind Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, and one of the world's wealthiest persons, he and many others have recently commented on bond market pricing for state government and municipality bonds and how much the prices have dropped, in many cases to junk level because they're so leveraged and so ready for a bankruptcy. The only thing saving them is their ability to tax their way out of the crisis. With strong government leadership, we can send the right signals to both the debt markets and the equity markets by passing measures like this, getting our fiscal house in order, eliminating our deficits, redesigning, reinventing, transforming our value proposition to and with our citizens, with their input. We will send the signal not just to other states, but to the world markets. And members, always remember, we are forever now linked to the global markets, that this is a great place to do business. By passing measures like this and truly innovating, transforming our government, we will attract far more capital, create far more jobs than the few which we are reducing through measures like this. Absolutely. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
Senator Lilly and then Senator Ortman, and we're getting close to a vote here, members. Senator
Chair,
Lilly.
I'll pass. Pardon?
Oh, you didn't have any? Okay. Senator Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Daley, could you please find your way back to this chart? A number of us and members of the committee had other meetings and were not able to be here at the beginning of your presentation, and did not have the benefit of seeing some of the information that you presented at the beginning of your conversation. Senator Daley, you referred to the fact that we need to transform our workforce, working to redesign and reform what we are doing in government. And that is the purpose of this committee. That is one of the things that we are charged with, is looking at how we deliver government services and reinventing ourselves for the 21st century. But as we look at the chart that you have up on the board there, we're seeing the way that our state government spending is outpacing inflation, outpacing population growth, and we must find a way to change the trajectory of those of this graph. We cannot afford this graph that is in front of us. Senator Cohen today charged us on the floor with being a little more crazy and getting involved in the budget. But Senator Cohen, you did ask us. You did ask us to focus on the budget, seriously, and to spend more time, more energy, getting into the meat of what we need to do to change the way that we are delivering government services, and how do we meet this budget situation that we are in, and this conversation that we are having today, this testimony that we're having from folks about this, both in favor and opposed, is part of the purpose of why we are here. This is the intent of what we are trying to achieve. I look at this chart, and I find myself asking, how can the residents, how can the people that are working in the state of Minnesota afford the government that we are delivering? We cannot afford the government at the level that it is at. We can't afford that. As was stated, we have a 7% unemployment rate. We have a 16% underemployment rate. And at these levels, we cannot afford to continue to grow government at the pace that it is. We have heard from the people at Red Wing Shoes that if we do not get things under control the way that we are spending money, that if there were a new owner of Red Wing Shoes, that there is no doubt that they would leave the state and go someplace else. This week we heard that Hutchinson Technology is leaving the state of Minnesota. Why are they doing that? There are other opportunities in other states to make more money, to employ people, and to provide services. We're not an island, folks. We're here competing on a global stage, and we must find a way to deliver government services more efficiently, more effectively, all of the things that are being said on that front page of that statement. I encourage us to consider the proposals that are in this document. This is a way of looking at the way we deliver government services more effectively. This is not something, we're not alone here. Other states are doing this, companies are doing this, families are doing this. This is what we are all living in, and to feel that the state of Minnesota should be exempt from this conversation, I don't understand that concept. We all are participating in the same conversation, in the same environment, the same economy, and these conversations that we're having, I think, are normal conversations to be having at this time.
Senator
point,
Thompson.
Mr. Chair. To that point?
I was going to move the bill after I made a comment, so okay. Did you want other discussion? It's up to you, Mr. Chair.
To that point, I just want it to be noted that Hutchinson Technology moved out of the South Dakota quarter several years ago, so it's not all about what Minnesota taxes are or whatever, and they are moving to Wisconsin, which doesn't have that much different of a system. So I think that let's be fair and say it the way it is.
Senator Ortman, did you have your hand?
Thank you. We heard testimony this morning in the tax committee about Hutchinson Technology and that they are moving to Wisconsin because there were some favorable climate issues there, that they built a new manufacturing plant. So these are issues that we have to deal with every day. We have to face the reality. Senator Lilly is absolutely right.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, quickly, if I might. First of all, again, response to Senator Lilly, I clearly will take several weeks to live down that what I thought was a flattering comment. But
Senator Cohen, you notice I haven't said anything yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, but I've got a couple of members over there. So, but I do want to make a comment. And the majority leader criticized me last week for being a longtime member here, although she misstated that I didn't know much about the private sector, but I do have a private sector job and many private sector clients. But I do note, I always kind of look like the historic context. The significant growth in the state budget came during the plenty years, where we take this chart and we look at the combination of inflation plus general fund spending. It's during these past 8 years. I will note that during the last couple of perpetual budgets, there was no difference of that sort. The only other time where there's been some significant growth was during the time of high surpluses. Some of us in this place argued for putting more of that surplus money into the budget reserve to protect against a downturn. That was rejected by the Republican House over and over again. And we made the argument here in the Senate that we should hold on to some of that money, that there was no guarantee the good times were going to last. And sure enough, they didn't last very long. But the Republican House was insistent on not doing that. So I would take that part of our history, coupled with the Pawlenty history, and therein is the problem.
And as long as we're talking about history, let us not forget that in the Senate, the majority was not Governor Pawlenty's party. So I just want to – I hate to belabor and dump everything on the governor, but he was working with the other party here, Senator Cohen. So I can't think – I can't say that you can dump all those issues on him. And I'm going to move to Thompson.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator
if I could respond.
Senator Thompson.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, I guess a brief comment I'd make is I don't think this is a clash of political parties anymore. It's a clash of worldviews. There's one worldview that says you grow government, you create government jobs, you make government bigger and bigger, and you employ people that way, and good things happen, like Greece and California and Massachusetts. It's not working. So a different worldview says we should hire only as many public employees as we need to efficiently deliver public services, but that wealth and therefore higher standards of living are created in the private sector. And a successful private sector will give us sufficient funds to fund government at a level that can provide the services. So, Senator Cohen, I'm not here to defend the Republicans on this stuff. I think it's a clash of worldviews is my point, and I guess and I understand there might be more discussion, but at this point I would like to move Senate File 81 as amended and ask that it be passed and re-referred to the Finance Committee.
Senator Thompson moves Senate File 81 as amended be
roll
recommended
call.
To pass and re-referred to Finance Committee. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I've got some amendments.
Okay. And I did hear a roll call.
And Senator
one will be granted. Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not necessarily arguing that there might not be some things we can do. And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that you don't want to get into my historic discussion, but I do feel compelled to suggest that Governor Pawlenty, who I have a lot of respect for, is campaigning around the country based upon his basically being able to control spending and get whatever he wanted out of the state legislature. He's been saying that repeatedly around the country. I have followed the campaign closely, and I will keep this with me.
So
but,
noted, Senator Cohen.
But relative
you.
To amendments, and some of this is our lessons learned from the Pawlenty administration, that we attempted in the Senate to maybe look at a kind of a one-size-fits-all budget, and there was criticism from both Democrats and Republicans relative to that. And so I would suggest that I understand what Senator Daley is trying to do, and I don't argue that we have to take a look at doing things differently. And would agree with Senator Thompson. I'm not sure I'd be quite as apocalyptic as Senator Thompson, but quite that far. But I do think that there's no question there are some significant issues in front of us. But I think we have to be careful about what we're doing and make sure that on a step-by-step basis we have some sense. So, Mr. Chairman, to get to the point on line 1.19, if you would allow an oral argument or oral amendment, it says executive branch does not include the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I put comma and the Department of Public Safety because I think we should exclude public safety from this.
I could request a roll call vote, Mr. Chair.
So simple amendment.
Is that
yes.
What, Senator Dibble requests a roll call vote. One will be taken.
What line was this again?
Any discussion on
report where that is? Thank you.
Could you repeat that, Senator Cohen, please?
Mr. Chairman, line one, on the delete everything amendment, line 1.19, maybe Mr. Bottom would want to correct me. I added a comma after universities and the Department of Public Safety.
Mr. Bonner, does that work?
Mr. Chairman, that's fine.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Daley.
If I could just make a brief comment. As the author, I would be open to that amendment members, just so you know, I very much appreciate the work that our public safety folks do, and I think that that would be fine.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, are we really taking the Department of Public Safety out of the executive branch? Because we're saying, by definition, that the executive branch does not include the Department of Public Safety. That is not true. But that's an odd way to deal with it, I guess, is if you want to exempt them from the
Mr. Chairman,
maybe you should put number three, exclude the Department of Public Safety, but not call it an exclusion of the executive.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think my intent is, but I don't know if Mr. Bodern would.
Mr. Bodern, could you address that?
Mr. Chairman, if you look on 1.15, these are definitions supplied for the purposes of this section only, and the bill, the section in front of you, applies only to the executive branch. So if you redefine executive branch not to include MNSCU and the Department of Public Safety at Works, there might be another option to put in another subdivision that says the section doesn't apply to the Department of Public Safety, but it would have the same effect. And I think it's clear if you're going to exclude MNSCU from the executive branch to make that a comprehensive list.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Senator
Olson. I guess I've never thought of MNSCU as being the executive branch. That's why I see a definite distinction there. But maybe it is somewhere else.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you. I'm wondering if Senator Cohen's amendment isn't overly broad. I'm wondering if what you're really trying to do is take out the troopers or law enforcement, or if you're really trying to take out the entire Department of Public Safety. I would be in favor of the first one. I would be opposed to the second one. So maybe you could just clarify what your intent is here, Senator Cohen.
Sure.
Senator Cohen.
Chairman, Senator Ortman, my intent is to exempt the entirety of public safety because we are not sure what we're doing.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I would like to amend the amendment. I would move to amend it to the State Patrol. I think it's easier to do to exclude, for purposes of this section, C3 would be the State Patrol.
Any discussion on the amendment to the amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
All right, then, again, my intent was to exempt the entirety of public safety, so I will reoffer my amendment to include, and would ask for some help from Mr. Bodern, to include the rest of the Department of Public Safety.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, that's out of order.
Excuse me.
You better adopt your... Mr. Chairman, are you going to withdraw your amendment or allow it to be voted on? Senator Cohen.
I'm sorry. I apologize. That's correct. My amendment's been amended now. So now there's no amendment in front of us, I don't believe.
Yes, it is.
You're correct. The amendment was amended,
mm-hmm.
And we voted on that.
On the amendment.
So I guess we have the amendment to the amendment
now
in front of us.
Now we have the amendment.
Well, let's have a vote on that, and then I'll reoffer my amendment. Mr. Chairman, I would encourage a yes vote on this amendment, and then I'll reoffer my other amendment.
All those in favor of the amendment?
As amended.
As amended.
Is there a roll call?
Not on this one.
Roll call.
Was it? All right. A roll call has been granted.
Roll call.
Mr. Chair, just for my clarification,
Senator,
can you restate
Thompson.
What we're voting on?
We are voting on the amendment to Senator Cohen's amendment.
Okay.
No, we've already done that.
Oh, excuse me. That one was adopted. The wording State Patrol. As okay. Now, Mr. Bonner.
So, Mr. Chairman, the amendment before the committee now, Senator Cohen's amendment, as it was amended, is on page 1, line 19, after universities, to insert, comma, and the State Patrol.
And the State Patrol. All right. And a roll call was requested on that. So, Secretary, please take the roll.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazalka?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin? Yes. Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres-Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Chairman Perry?
Yes.
Good thinking we had a roll call.
All right.
Thank me.
Senator Cohen.
Have you announced?
Oh, excuse me. Motion does prevail.
Mr. Chairman, then I would offer my first amendment to exclude the rest of the Department of Public Safety. I would defer to Mr. Bodden as to the wording of that amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I would argue that that's out of order. We've already dealt with that by amending it.
No, we have
We've
not.
We've already managed that amendment. I would argue that we have.
Mr. Chairman, that is not correct. This is a committee. Amendments are in order. There are no rules in the Senate that would prohibit that amendment.
Right. Mr. Bodden, can we get some clarification from you on that?
Mr. Chairman, that's the committee did take action on an amendment to delete the reference to the Department of Public Safety. So that question has been determined. And it's really your judgment as to whether the committee is, in effect, revisiting the earlier amendment. If Senator Cohen were to offer a new amendment relating to the Department of Public Safety.
Mr. Chairman, since it's my amendment, before the chair rules, I'd like to be heard on that.
Senator Cohen, I'll give you an opportunity to speak on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've been around this place for a while, and I've been not a chairman this year, but I've been chairman over the years, and I have allowed all sorts of amendments to be heard, whether in the Finance Committee, Finance Divisions, where we've gone back and forth on amendments where something was included, excluded, whatever. And I don't think I've ever seen such an amendment ruled out of order. Ever. If this is the new world that Senator Thompson was referring to a couple minutes ago, I guess that this would be a new world. But I've never seen that.
Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chairman, I might add, I served my last term in the House with a Republican majority and never saw it there. Never.
Further advice, Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, I believe the committee has already acted authoritatively. But nonetheless, by all means, if we want to vote again, it would seem to me that what we would be voting then would be to further carve out an exemption or exception from this bill for all the remainder of the Department of Public Safety employees, except the troopers who we've already dealt with. So I think it's unnecessarily confusing. I think the committee has already acted on that question. And so, Senator Cohen, I'm not sure that you're Are you asking to reconsider?
Well, no, no.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, that's why I suggest I would defer to Mr. Bodden to make sure that your amendment was not included in this next amendment so that we're not repeating ourselves. We're doing something different so that we keep the exemption for for troopers in there and then have a vote on the exclusion of the rest of public safety. So I would defer to Mr. Bodden to state how that ought to be worded.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bodden.
Senator Cohen, you could amend what has been adopted so that the sentence would read, and the Department of Public Safety, including the State Patrol.
Fine. I would move that amendment, Mr. Chairman, and ask for roll call.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, members, I think before we vote, I think it's really important to understand exactly who would be covered in public safety. Senator Cohen, could you share with us exactly who those members are that you're referring to?
Senator Cohen.
How many people it would include?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Daley, that's exactly my point. I don't know. That's why I hesitate to cut anybody from the Department of Public Safety at this point without knowing what we're doing and how that's going to impact on public safety. That's exactly why I'm offering the amendment. I don't know.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would speak against Senator Cohen's amendment, and here's why. Earlier, we talked about the fact when I believe the gentleman, Mr. Side, was testifying that, you know, departments with one or two or three people wouldn't have to be cut because this was an overall reduction that the executive branch would be responsible for making. Now, it happens the current governor is not of my political party, but I believe that public safety is something that's a nonpartisan issue. And I have no reason to believe that Governor Dayton and whoever the governor is on in January of 2015 will take into consideration the importance of public safety and the need to protect people. That to me clearly is a nonpartisan issue, and I think any governor who cares about the state, and they all do, I'm going to assume that, or they wouldn't be seeking that position, they're not going to cut our public safety if there are other areas from which to make those reductions. So, I mean, to me, this is one of those things where we're transferring decisions to the executive branch because the governor would be in the best position to determine where reductions can be made without harm to the public, and I don't think it makes sense to hamstring the governor. State Patrol, okay, I voted for it, that's fine, but I think if we start broadening that out to the point where we admittedly don't even know who all would be taken in by it, I don't think that makes sense, and I assume Governor Dayton is very concerned about public safety in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson?
Well, Mr. Chair, just to hitchhike on Senator Thompson's comments, there is nothing that says that this has to be equally distributed through all agencies. And when you're looking to 2015, we've had a fair amount of discussion about the fact of reforming and reexamining our functions and core functions, and I think that's the whole idea, is that during this period of time we would in fact be doing that, and those that are the ones that are core will be retained, where there may be some elimination of some aspects of it that would take care of that, dealing with that goal of the 15%. So I think if you want to go down this path and take this one, I'm sure we could be here all night and one by one take another department out and keep going and just play that game. But I think that's unnecessary. So I do not support the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
No. Senator Cohen's First Amendment was to eliminate public safety in its entirety, and I brought to the committee's attention that was overly broad. It's not specific, and that's why I asked the committee to amend his amendment to be specific so we would all know exactly what we were talking about and that there wouldn't be any of this confusion. I don't think that his current amendment is properly defined in its scope. I don't think that we have defined it for purposes of this bill successfully, and I would still maintain that his amendment at this time is out of order as having already been decided by the committee on a roll call vote.
Mr. Chairman, that
Senator
is...
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, that's why I asked for help from counsel to... I mean, I can play around with the words as well, but I thought we would take a neutral source, take Senate counsel, because my intent is we have voted on Senator Ortman's amendment to exclude the State Patrol. Okay. I wish to exclude the remainder of public safety. So... it's possible, Senator Ortman, that the wording suggested originally by myself or maybe by counsel in the first go-around is confusing. I think we can come up with simple language that would very much allow this amendment to proceed. And if people want to vote against it, so be it. My point is we don't know what we're doing. So, Mr. Chairman, my amendment is clearly a different amendment at this point. And again, it would clearly be in order, at least by any past precedent in history of the Minnesota State Senate.
You've been here forever.
Not forever.
In consulting with counsel and just listening now, I would have to agree with Senator Ortman, and your motion is out of order.
Mr. Chairman.
Next amendment?
Yep, Mr. Chairman, I've got another amendment.
Yes, sir.
I would add then this one's simpler, and I have to add, I've never seen this, ever.
The second time you've said that to me, Senator Cohen.
I haven't. So on line 1.19, and again, would defer to counsel, would add comma, and the Department of Corrections.
Mr.
Chair, I request a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested.
Will be granted. Senator Daley, response to that.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how many more amendments are in the queue, but with respect to what Senator Thompson said, I think is very, very appropriate, and that is I trust Governor Dayton to do the right thing. I don't think he's going to carve out too many people in too many of these departments. He's going to keep public safety at the forefront of his mind. He's going to ensure that our roads are safe, that our streets are safe. He's going to do the right thing. And, I don't know how long we could drag this out, but the intent of the bill is hasn't changed.
Thank you, Senator Daley. Mr. Bodern.
Mr. Chairman, I think the proper place to put the amendment would be on page 1, line 19, after universities, insert, comma, the Department of Corrections. And then the new sentence will read, the executive branch does not include MNSCU, the Department of Corrections, and the State Patrol.
On the amendment, a roll call has been requested and granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres-Wright?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Chairman Perry?
No. Being 8 noes, 5 yeas, amendment does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Just to answer, Senator, I just have a couple of other quick amendments. Again, with the new language we've added, I'll defer to council, but would the next agency I would want to exclude would be the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yes, I predicted.
Mr. Bonner.
So, Mr. Chairman, the wording would be the same as the last time, just inserted after universities, comma, the Department of Veterans Affairs. And then the new sentence would read, executive branch does not include MNSCU, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and the State Patrol.
I would ask for roll call.
Roll call has been requested and granted. On the amendment, Secretary, take the roll.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres-Wright?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Chairman Perry?
No. Any further amendments? We do have the secretary. Oh, excuse me. There were 8 noes, 5 yeas. Amendment does not prevail.
Mr.
Chairman. Just want to remind everyone, we do have the Secretary of State waiting, and we will get to the Secretary of State. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I promise this is it. I'm done.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, you do want me to be driven crazy of not being able to get bills heard in the Education Committee, which begins...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, again, I have much more faith in you than that. So.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Senator Daley.
Just want to put something in the record. People who know Senator Daley know that he has served in the military on active duty in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, in Iraq, in Israel, in Cuba, a year in Korea, and I have put my life on the line. That vote was just a charade. That vote was not how I feel about veterans. People know that I will go to the ends for every veteran. I will do whatever it takes for every veteran, and I just want that in the record that this is a charade, and that vote does not mean that I don't support veterans.
Duly noted, Senator Daley. Well, do you have an amendment, Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, I do, but I
Senator Cohen,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen, do you have an amendment?
But Mr. Chairman, this was directed toward myself.
Senator Cohen,
I have an amendment. Okay. I have an amendment. I would move, lastly, the Department of Military Affairs. And I want to speak to the amendment.
Chairman, the amendment would read as follows. On page 1, line 19, after your universities, insert, comma, the Department of Military Affairs.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment.
Senator Cohen.
And make the comment that I do not in any way suggest by offering this amendment that I put in diminishment how anybody in this committee feels toward our veterans and our military, and certainly above all not Senator Daley, who, as he suggests, has served this country in ways that most of us have not. So in no way is that suggesting that, but this is exactly the kind of debate that we had with Governor Pawlenty, with us being on the other side. So,
Mr. Chair,
I move the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I request a roll call vote.
Mr. Chair.
Senator. A roll call has been requested and is granted. Senator Daley.
I'm in support of the amendment, just for the record, so folks know. I'd be in favor of the amendment.
Senator Goodwin.
I just want to say, Mr. Chair, that in the last amendment and now on this one, I support both of those. And one of the problems here is that supposedly this is a charade. I don't think it's a charade whatsoever, and if you say that they're not specific enough, how can you, or that it's some kind of a charade, how can you leave Minsky out but not leave some of these other important areas, corrections and public safety and so forth, out? How can you decide kind of arbitrarily that it should be Minsky left out but not some of these other important areas?
Senator Goodwin, I'm going to step in here and say that we have discussed that, and he has answered that question early on. A roll call has been called for and granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres-Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Chairman Perry?
No. I believe we're now ready to take a vote. Oh, excuse me. Excuse me. The result was seven nays and six ayes. Motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman, if I may reassert my motion.
Senator Thompson.
That Senate File 81 as amended pass through the committee Senator and be re-referred to finance.
Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment that I would like to offer, if I may.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment only intends to address, Senator Daley, what I think you said is your intention, that you really don't want people with high skill to retire, and that is really not your intention. And I think that in your analysis, that's a good idea. The Subdivision 2, Line 120, helps the state with that. That you should conduct an analysis to look at, you know, the impact of early retirement. And I would like to add a sentence, just a few words in there, before authorizing an early retirement or any permanent reductions under Subdivision 3 or 4. So the words are, or any permanent reductions. So the implication here, Senator Daley, will be that the analysis will guide the decision as to, you already have the language here saying that you should conduct the analysis. And so giving the department some time to suggest how the cuts will be made. What I'm trying to provide is some clarification that your analysis will be utilized for the future decisions.
Senator Torres-Ray, could you...
So it will read in 120, Subdivision 2, before authorizing an early retirement or any permanent reductions under Subdivision 3 or 4.
So you're adding or any permanent deductions.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I still didn't understand where that is to be inserted.
Okay, I'll repeat.
It's on line 120, mm-hmm. after the word retirement. Mm-hmm. Add or any permanent deduction.
Reductions. Under subdivision.
Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Torres-Ray, Subdivisions 3 and 4 authorize the incentives. They don't impose any of the reductions, and if you insert it there, there may be a little bit of confusion. Another place you could insert that language would be on line 1.21 after the first comma, or making any permanent reductions under this section. Then it's clear when the analysis would have to be performed.
Thank you. I didn't know where to place it, but the idea will be to use the analysis that you're proposing. So if the staff recommends that that's a better place, I'm okay with that.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Mr. Bonin, could you just repeat that one more time?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 21, after the first comma, insert, or making any permanent reductions under this section, comma.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, I would say at this time I would be opposed to that amendment, not fully understanding and knowing exactly the impacts that that would have. I am open to amending it down the road when I more fully understand that impact through further study, through council and fiscal analysis.
Thank you. Senator Ortman.
Tend to agree with Senator Daley that I'm not sure, Senator Torres-Ray, that that's the right timing in the bill, but I agree with what you're trying to do. I don't think anybody wants any permanent reductions to take place until the analysis has been done, but I'm not sure why it's being tied to the authorizing early retirement, and so I'm hoping that Senator Daley maybe could work with you to find the right place in this amendment before it goes to the full Finance Committee, and perhaps it could be addressed there, and maybe Senator Daley could speak to that point, but I'm just not sure it goes right there and that maybe it goes somewhere else in the bill.
On the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay.
Nay. Nay.
Motion does not prevail. Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I would reassert my motion that the Senate File 81 be passed out of the committee and re-referred to finance. As amended, pardon me. Thank you.
Senator Thompson moves that Senate File 81 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee. There was an early roll call vote asked out of the chute. It has been granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres-Ray?
No.
Senator Wieger?
No.
Chairman Perry?
Yes. Motion does prevail 8-5 and will be re-referred to Finance Committee.
All right, folks, as we transition here, we'll get Secretary of State up to the table here with Senator Perry. The final item on the agenda is Senate File 604, Senator Perry. Senator Perry, I understand you have an author's amendment.
I would move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. Senator Perry, please proceed on Senate File 604 as amended.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I'm pleased to have right beside me Secretary Ritchie. This is pretty straightforward. Senate File 604 is appropriating $471,000 from the general fund to reimburse the Secretary of State for expenses related to litigation concerning statutory exit polling restrictions and for the reimbursement of county expenditures incurred in administrating the gubernatorial election recount. That's a quick summary, but I want to first thank, and I'll let Secretary Ritchie talk, thank him for looking so far ahead and asking the counties to participate.
based on the fact that he knew this could be a very good cost-saving measure. And I would like the Secretary to briefly explain that.
Thank you.
Senator Daley. Secretary of State, if you could just please be as brief as you can. We've got other committee meetings coming up here.
Amen.
And we apologize for that previous one taking so long.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Chairman Perry, for carrying this bill and for being very supportive of our efforts. Very quickly, when recounts occur, they're triggered automatically. You know that's the half a percent rule. And there's two options when it's a statewide issue. One is to bring all the ballots to St. Paul, rent some auditorium, hire 500 people, do it that way, or partner with our local county auditors, our chief election officials, have them done in the counties where the ballots are and actually where the ballots reside. It's the difference often between 200,000 and 2 million, depending on how large the counts are. So it's a much less expensive and also, we believe, a more accurate and greater integrity. And so we appreciate those partnerships with our counties. And our bill would allow us to reimburse them for their hard expenses, which we've surveyed. And this, we believe, will be important to keep them as our good partners. They have to report to their county commissioners. The last recount was, of course, not in their budget. So this would be an opportunity to reimburse that expense and to make sure that we keep this partnership going. Thank you again for this opportunity, and I do appreciate the shortness of time, and thank you for getting us in today.
Thank you so much, Secretary of State. Would anyone like to testify in favor of this legislation? Seeing none. Would anyone like to testify against this legislation? Any discussion, members? Seeing none. Thank you, Senator Perry. If there's nothing further, with Senate File 604 as amended, it'll be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, thanks. My comments, Mr. Chair, are addressed to you. Earlier, Senator Daley characterized an amendment that was offered by Senator Cohen as a charade. I would suggest that is a characterization that is out of bounds in the context of committee deliberation and debate. And should have been so noted by yourself. Passions run high, and we certainly, in our hearts and minds, question the motive that people offer their suggestions and amendments in. I've made the mistake a number of times in the Senate of casting aspersions and questioning the motives of people's intentions and their bills and their amendments, and I have apologized for that because it's simply out of order. We don't actually know what someone's motivation is. And we can say anything we want outside of the context of committee debate and chamber debate out in the media and to our constituents and the like. But when we're in this particular setting, we take at face value the things that folks are offering in this committee debate.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, duly noted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble, duly noted.
Thank you.
There being no further business before the committee.